You're hanging with Zan on Double J.
Let's talk about Soberish, because this has been, it's been a decade since your last record. Yeah. I know you've been very busy touring. You toured Australia for the first time in amongst all that, which was wild to me when I found that out, that you'd never been here before. But in the last few years in particular, you've put out a memoir of stories and you've written and recorded this new album. Is there anything particular about this time that's made you want to go back to storytelling and to your musical life with such gusto?
Well, partly I think it was my time in life. Like, my son went to college and I was up for touring again, and I wanted to resurrect my rock career and do that kind of art making that when he was younger, I wanted to stick around and be there, more of momming, busy momming. But also it was the amount of young women artists, young female artists working today with total authorship and total just almost like as if they sprang complete from Zeus's head, like Athena or something. They're just so together with their image and what they're presenting. It feels so exciting to me to have, you know, come up during an all male time and then to be able to get back out. I wasn't going to miss this moment with young, with women, with female artists everywhere headlining the bills, you know?
That's so wild that, like, you think about all of those artists, and I could, you know, it feels as though women are dominating in the creation of the best music around at the moment. But many of those women may not have had the gumption to do it had it not been for you, for Liz Phair. And then full circle, you want to get back involved. You're inspired by their domination, 10, 20 years later. That's so goddamn wholesome. I love that.
It is kind of wholesome, isn't it? It's kind of beautiful. It's like, how could you not enjoy sort of the fruits of your labor? All that crap that we took, the women of my generation, has enabled there to be a better, more diverse, more authentic and empowered group of women. And like, how could you not, if you'd done all these rain dances, you know, and you'd been like walking through the drought the whole time, you know, if it starts suddenly pouring down rain, you're going to run out in it and dance and, you know, celebrate.
Well, I'm glad that you've joined the dance again. It's a wonderful album. How fresh are these songs? Did you write them relatively recently, or do they go back that 10 years?
No, most of them are pretty recent. I would say the majority. I think there's only a couple that are even 5 years old. So that would be the oldest. Yeah.
And did you know what you wanted to do when you went into write? Did you have a distinct idea of what Soberish would be?
I did. I didn't know how it would sound exactly, but I knew the mandate. I knew the concept. And I told Brad, I want to use the building blocks that we've already established with each other, you know, from days past, the sounds. And he's fanatical about getting the exact same amplifier that we were using with the same guitar. And this is the exact, you know, chorus pedal that I put on your, he remembers everything that we used. So we were going to use all those old tools, almost like the alphabet, but then we're going to make up a new language. We're going to do it in a way that neither of us feels like we totally know what's happening, so that we're surprised and it's fresh to us. And it feels like we're searching for something.
Brad is Brad Wood. He's the producer that you worked with on those early albums. What was it like for you to jump back in the studio with him again after all these years apart?
It was crazy, right? We were both older and we both looked older. You know, like, we'd stayed in touch, but there was definitely this kind of like, wow, we had to spend a couple days just laughing about the old days and marveling that we're still working, that we're still like doing this.
Yeah, and you've created something wonderful together. There's some really interesting sounds on this record. It's very much a Liz Phair album, and I think the center of that is your voice, your iconic voice, which sounds so beautiful and rich on this album. But sonically, it goes all over the place. And there's one particular song on this record that I wanted to ask you about, Ba Ba Ba. It feels really unorthodox. It ends somewhere very different to where it begins. Can you tell me about the making of that particular song?
First of all, thank you for asking me about that song. That's my favorite one on the record. I wanted there to be no traditional arrangements. So there is no traditional arrangements on the entire album. So Ba 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 is a perfect example of that. And I think of it as almost like the keystone to the whole album, because you come into the song with this kind of pop sensibility And I always want to smooth my hair down and put on my pretty makeup. And it's like you're just dating someone new and you're so excited. And you get that feeling like, oh my God, this is going to be my role. I'm ready. I'm ready, you know, to take my place on stage at starting this romance. And you're like your best perfect self. And you can hear it in the lyrics. I'm almost more girly. I'm almost more sweet and bubbly. And then by the end of the song, no, it's not going to happen. This isn't going to be this long romance that changes your life. It's just a fling and it's over already. And you see me like exiting the house, kind of like head down, walking on the gravel. He's got wings on his back because he seems so magnificent to me. And like you end up, you see like the totality of a short relationship in one song.
Just so you know. So you know a little more before you go. I never meant to cause you any heartache. See how our faces shine with me loving yours and you loving mine. Arm in arm, we climb aboard the elevator. We're gonna go on up to my hotel room, sneaking past the maid. I don't have the guts to tell you that I feel safe. I feel ooh.
And sonically, like I said, that it really does go all over the place. You've got that iconic Liz Phair guitar, but there's so much more. Were there certain, I guess, touchstones or eras that you were looking to create with the sound of Soberish?
I was thinking a lot about a part of my music fandom that I have never brought to an album before, which was when I was in high school and I was listening to a lot of new wave and I was just starting to go downtown, just starting to get out of the house as a young adult. And believe it or not, Walkmans were like a new thing. So like you could actually, for the first time ever, take your own personal score with you everywhere you went. And that was a big revelation for us. So that time period for me has a lot of evocative memories. And I don't know why Soberish, maybe because they legalized pot in California. So I was suddenly like dealing with a second puberty. It made me think about that time, you know, because I was like, well, shit, if I can buy it legally, I'm just going to do it all the time. What do I do? Like, you know, it was like hard.
Did you do it all the time?
No, I went to this vicious cycle of like, I'd totally buy it. And then I'd be like, this is perfect. I'm never going to not be high again. I'm just going to live like this and I'm going to announce it to everyone. And then I'd feel this terrible crushing guilt and I'd like not followed up with my responsibilities. I'm like, I will never do it again. I'll never do it again. This went on for like 3 years. So that was really embarrassing. And that's what I went through. But like, what can I say?
It's legal, you know. There's nothing wrong with it. It's all good. Those gummies, they just give you a nice buzz. What can I say?
They do.
I love as well that you use the word score to describe, you know, taking your music with you, because it does, music becomes a soundtrack to our life, doesn't it? Especially when you've got headphones and you're seeing the world around you. It almost makes life feel like a movie when you've got all those sounds in your heads. And certainly listening to Soberish with headphones on, the textures going on in this record are quite incredible. You know, there's certain songs where you can really hear the room. A song like Lonely Street in particular has just got such a beautiful moment on this record. And there's a great sense of yearning to my ears, but also just sonically, I'm in that room when you're recording it. Can you tell me about making that song?
I love that. I love that you feel that way. I mean, part of what you're hearing is Brad's incredible production, because he just has a way of making things sound exquisite. Anything. You could throw a broken car engine at him and he'd be like, hang on. And like six plugins, he'd be like, sounds pretty good now. You know, like he can just do that stuff. But that in particular, those are nice moments. The two songs on there that it's just me and my acoustic guitar, because a lot of times I would make the decision to take my guitar off of songs to make it sound fresh and new. Mm. So the fact that there are two poignant, personal, intimate acoustic guitar songs where I'm the only instrument other than Brad's drums. Like, it's just me. It's really cool.
Kind of mentioned at the start that you were driven to come back into music after seeing, you know, the state of music now in the sort of 2020s. How comfortably do you sit with your past, you know, because your debut album, Exile in Guyville, is just, you know, so many people talk about this record, but often that first record being so celebrated can be a bit of a burden for some people. How does it sit with you in terms of moving forward with new music in your life?
There was a time, I would say for the first 10 years, where that album haunted me. It felt like a sort of a bar that I could never top again, or something that people wanted me to imitate rather than make an authentic, real new record. So that was hard for me. And then in 2010, I did a mini documentary and I went around and interviewed all the guys of Guyville that had been like part of my world back then, and asked them what it was like for them when that record took off, because that was a big explosive time in music for Chicago. And then I finished up like with asking women what it meant to them. And something about that, hearing the difference between, you go through this documentary and you just hear men talking the whole time, and you start to feel that feeling like, God, why is it all guys? Which is like what Guyville was like. So then you get to the women and it's just these emotional stories. And they just want to say what it was like when they were driving away from a breakup, or, you know, all these small personal moments. And that's where I live with it. So now when I look back on my first record, I don't see this big critical success. I see my youth. I see my innocence, my justifiable anger at the patriarchy. I see my life encapsulated in this moment in time that other people share. And I think that's pretty cool.
It's wild too, isn't it? Because we all go through those experiences, but very, very few of us have such a public sharing of that slice of time in our life.
It's a crazy thing to think about, isn't it? Because it almost doesn't even feel like me. She could do things that I feel like I'd be intimidated to do now, you know, and like, how did you know how to do that? But isn't that weird?
Yeah. The braveness of youth, isn't it? That kind of, yeah, like, you know, going in all guns blazing.
All guns blazing. And yeah, Isn't that a remarkable thing to witness? And isn't it remarkable when you are no longer that thing inside of yourself to go, oh my God, but I was that. I was this blazing, streaking fury of a human being, you know, like, and no one can live like that forever. But it's really nice to have been a rocket person for a while.
A rocket person. I love it. Have you noticed how your writing has changed as you've gotten older and as you've experienced life?
Yes, I have. And it's interesting. I'm so much more interested, especially on this album, of the transitional moments. Like when a relationship is just starting or a relationship is just ending, this kind of no man's land where a push or a nudge could change the outcome. And you almost, because you're this age, know what to do to change the outcome. But do you dare? Is it actually going to make you happier to make this thing, you know, last longer, or cut this thing off short? So I'm fascinated by those inflection points.
Yeah, the nuances, which I feel is like something that you are more open to the older you get. It's not as easy to say, this sucks, this rules, I hate you, I love you. There's a lot of gray area the older you get.
It's interesting in that gray area. You can actually affect change. When something's totally happening or totally not happening, there's not much you can do.
Yeah.
But in those in-between times, there's a lot you can do.
One of the very early songs that we heard from you, Liz, was Hey Lou. When I first started playing it, I was like, this is about a love song about Laurie and Lou. And when you listen to the lyrics, it's like, well, again, there's a bit more nuance. Tell us about
a little more.
bit more going on there. There are some fantastic lyrics on this.
I may have been wrong to assume that he was a handful. Apparently, like from what she says in interviews, they had a very peaceful relationship. But that always was fascinating to me. I held them up as like a celebrity couple because to me, each in their own right was so strong, so imposing of a creative influence. And then to see them married, I just couldn't imagine, like, what do you think their daily life is like? Like, what is it like to be in a couple like that? And Brad and I in the studio were just giggling. We were laughing so hard writing those lyrics, just thinking, like, what on earth? That's our first co-written song ever. And it was really kind of spontaneous and magical. And we just started riffing on this idea that came from a loop in a chorus section that just sounded like I was saying, hey, Lou. It just sounded like, hey, Lou, hey, Lou. And Brad's like, wouldn't it be funny if we wrote a song about Laurie Anderson talking to Lou Reed? And I was like, yes. It was just so good.
It is so good. I want to finish there with this song. We've been loving it on Double J. And what a treat to chat with you about this brilliant new record. Welcome back, Liz. We missed you. And congratulations on Soberish. It's so, so good. Wonderful to talk to you here on Double J today.
Can't wait to come back to Australia. Had the best time ever, 2018.
What's inside that heavy head? Are you on the junk again? Your eyes look dead, but your mouth keeps moving on and on. We'll lose it all.
Zanro on Double J.